I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. I'm here at HIMSS 26 today speaking with Joran Lubedel, who is Head of Product Security at B. Braun, a German-based medical device maker and a maker of various other healthcare products. Welcome, Joran.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Joran, you're here at HIMSS speaking about post-quantum concerns in healthcare. At this point, how prepared do you think most healthcare sector organizations and their CISOs and their security teams are to deal with quantum risk, and why?
Well, it's an opinion statement, I would guess. I think not many are really prepared. I think they are in an early stage getting information, gathering information, but not really have started really to do something about it. And or I guess there's an awareness situation we have to increase a lot.
And why do you think there's a delay? Do they just kind of see it as too far off? They've got too many more immediate issues that they have to deal with?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of all of those situations. I mean, number one is they have really a lot of other issues. We are still not yet on this level with cybersecurity where we should be, and it takes a lot of time due to a lot of different reasons. Is a problem of talents. I mean, we have a shortage of people and the focus of healthcare provider and resources. And I think some of them probably also believe, well, it doesn't affect me yet, so why should I spend now time and resources on that?
So at this point, what do you see as some of the top post-quantum risk concerns that organizations should be worried about if they are not really thinking about it, and how should they be preparing for this?
So number one is definitely harvest now, decrypt later. I mean, when you look into the current situation, if people go into a healthcare system and basically get an EMR and all the data behind this, there is a lot of valuable information, and they can use this for later. And the other thing is really the readiness. I think that the concern is really the readiness. I'm a little bit afraid that if the first time something happened, people are not prepared and not ready, and then we have similar situation as it happened when cybersecurity become a topic. So that's how I see it currently.
So now, where in healthcare do you think we have the most quantum vulnerable cryptography right now? And what sort of devices, what sorts of, you know, legacy applications, systems, and, you know, those sorts of things are most at risk?
So I can speak about a little bit about the medical device industry. So one of the things is the most quantum vulnerable cryptography in healthcare sits inside long life connected medical devices. And as you know, a medical device is usually a huge investment, and they can run between 5 and sometimes over 20, 25 years. So that's one of my concerns. These devices are really heavily reliant on classical encryption, asymmetric cryptography like RSA or ECC, and they use this for authentication, secure updates, and so on and so forth. The problem is we have just started to update even our newer device generation, and there is another issue, like the computing power and upgrade them is not as simple as a normal computer, because you just can't take those devices out of the market and put a new whatever board inside. That costs money, there's a huge regulation behind this, and so that's really a problem. The other side on the healthcare sector is, for me, the EMR, as I mentioned. These are huge system, very connected, with a lot of data, very connected. And when I say connected, it means really that this is a whole ecosystem which you know shares information between each other, and usually use this type of cryptography today, and they are that pose a lot of risk in the future on a quantum, in my eyes.
So now, with that said, what do you recommend healthcare CISOs do now, or at least sooner rather than later, to address some of this quantum risk? And when it comes to the device makers, you know, what are they doing? And, you know, maybe you could talk about your own organization or in general.
I think number one is, as I said, inventory. I mean, you can only fix the things you know, right? If you don't know what you have, do an inventory, asset everything. It must not be 100% perfect, but a cryptographic bill of materials, so to speak, is really something essential. And it can be started now. There is no reason why you should not have this inventory today. And you need this, by the way, today. Because if you run into a manual process, you have any kind of other risk, which has nothing to do with PQC. In the medical device sector, it's basically the same. Traditionally, those devices had not really managed certificates. They are usually out manual processes and so on and so forth. So inventory, asset, and also introduce things what I put under the umbrella of cyber agility. So being able to update your processes, your devices, your software on the fly, rather than, you know, to have another situation as we have today with all the legacy devices where you can't update them. So think in the design already what needs to be done to be able to be crypto or cyber agility. And then you have crypto agility, have proper update mechanism, and have proper ideas how you rotate certificates, keys, and all those kind of things. So put it on a PKI and have only a single PKI, not multiple different PKIs, and manage those automatically.
Now, when you throw AI into the mix, how does that impact post-quantum concerns? Can they help? Will it hurt? You know, what? How does that fit into the whole dilemma that we're facing?
I mean, AI is, it can be very helpful and it can be also very risky. I think, in my eyes, I see currently a lot of people, they are very excited still about AI, but they don't see really a lot of risk associated with the use of AI, you know, enabled solutions, so to speak. Probably it can help for assessment on risk analysis, in particular in very complex environments, you know, to get better and quicker results. At the same time, again, I see there is risk with AI abused for the wrong things. So there is, when you talk about quantum computing, also the necessity, how we protect the agent, how do we protect our data used by AI? How can we ensure that those data are not manipulated or on any kind of compromise? I think there's also a lot of work to be done. And again, I see it positive. It's time to do something. It's still time to do something. Inventory is important. Make a plan, make security by design, and don't try to make bolt-on security. That would work. That wouldn't work, or it's very costly.
So when it comes to medical devices, we see organizations often struggle with their vulnerability management. And, you know, often it's, you know, advised, well, you know, keep your medical devices sort of segmented, especially if they're legacy and they can't be patched. Do you see that perhaps when it comes to post-quantum, the healthcare entities will have to do the same thing with their older devices? Well, you know, these can't be, you know, updated in a way where they're protected against, you know, these advanced cryptography. Well, now we're going to have segmented devices that are can't be patched. We're going to have segmented devices that are post-quantum risks. You know, how do you see that playing out?
Honestly, that's what I see still as a huge risk. So there is no plan. I think we talk about hybrid scenarios, and I haven't seen much yet. I see the industry for those like quantum algorithms. I see there are standards, but not addressing exactly this problem where you need hybrids and how to use this with those devices. They cannot be equipped with quantum. And by the way, that can be even newer ones, because think about an implant. The computing power is simply limited. So you need anyhow a solution to tackle this issue. However, in our industry, we approach this always with risk-based approach. So I would not always say it's a threat. So look on the situation, look on, you know, what can happen if. Keep always safety in mind, because again, we do things for the purpose of treating patients, not for security purpose. Worst case, don't connect it and keep it as a medical device as it is. So essential functions should be given. But to your point, yeah, it is a risk, and I think legacy is a risk, and either we have some programs to remove those devices over time from the market, that is costly, or other ideas, but I have no answer yet.
In terms of emerging medical device technologies, you had mentioned, you know, implantable devices. You know, I hear more also these days about implantable neural devices for the brain. What are you watching that seems exciting in terms of the patient, you know, advances in medical treatment or diagnostic technologies, but then at the same time you have the cyber risk that falls into that?
Yeah, I'm more excited about the way how we can help people. I think, again, it goes back to the risk. I mean, not every implant must necessarily pose a risk when there's a cyber threat, right? There are solutions, for example, for cancer treatment where you can, exactly at the point where this cancer sits, put a specific medication and it helps you to treat. Is it risky? Maybe not. You have to evaluate this. And I think that's the challenge, that we should also go away from this generalization of there is a risk because. It is about what is the device for, what is the device doing, and what is the risk associated, and then find some mitigation or some other compensating control. Is there a fit for everything? I don't think so.
So in other words, cybersecurity shouldn't be a barrier to innovation. You have the innovation,
right.
Then you evaluate what the risks may be, and then if there's a cyber risk, take care of that, and as well as the other risk. But it shouldn't be a barrier to innovation.
I totally agree. So I'm a strong fighter. I work in the ISO and other organization currently also as a chair for MedTech Europe or EpicMate. One of my biggest goals is always to utilize standards as much as possible, build frameworks. And why I'm saying this, once we have agreed as an industry and as a healthcare environment to use specific frameworks, that would allow us to be focused back on our products and have something which can be implemented easily from everyone in the same way and build like a ecosystem which is protected. Because again, it doesn't help if one supplier or one manufacturer is secure enough. The whole system needs to be secured. It's everything is connected. And security has to be where the patient is. That's always what I try to emphasize when I talk to people. Like, my endpoint security is my patient. It's not the computer.
In terms of AI helping with vulnerability management today, do you see that being optimistic, or you know, what's the reality of AI helping in vulnerability management with medical devices?
I think it's a huge opportunity if this is done right? Remove the bias, remove all those other things which can pose risks to AI. I see it positive. Like, one of the examples I have is when you think about threat modeling is usually a static approach, right? You have a diagram and then you load it and you find out this is on my interface and this is the risk I have. So you do this maybe once during your development stage. If I put this in an AI-driven approach where you constantly review new threats, new vulnerabilities, new known exploitabilities, whatever, and apply this always to my threat model, I think we go into a dynamic approach, which I believe is much better than any kind of SBOM management and anything like that. So this is where I see really opportunities and where I know that people already work on this, to go away from static to an automatic solutions, and this is where I think AI can help us to be much more efficient and much faster.
Well, thank you so much, Jörn. I've been speaking to Jörn Lobedel. I'm Marianne Kolbasuk-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.